You all don't realize what happened this morning. Some of you, someone I think over here, one of the brothers, mentioned 629 as a hymn. Who was that? Interesting. As we were singing it, Janie whispered in my ear, that 30 years ago, right before Thanksgiving, she decided and made a commitment to wear her covering. Now, for you all that have grown up wearing coverings, and maybe don't even understand what that means, it totally revolutionized our lives. 30 years ago, everything changed. Everything. We got saved in a little Baptist church in West Virginia. But as we were singing this song, she looked over at me and saw me weeping. Not tears of, well, there's some tears of mourning for another time. And those of you who have changed drastically, I imagine some of you have sometimes mourned for things when you look back. But also tears of joy that our lives completely changed. Completely revolutionized our lives and Christ's work in our hearts. There's nothing that's going to save you by wearing a covering. 30 years ago, about right now, it was in the evening though, two adults' lives were never the same. Never the same. I greet you in the name of Jesus Christ and from the Church at Deer Lodge and from the brothers and sisters there, and we're very thankful that I could be here. I'm very thankful that for the opportunity last night to share with you about the work at MZL and y'all's involvement in that work through your work there in South America. And for I got to meet the other brother that's going to be going down there, and I'm going to remember his face and his family's face. And we're going to be praying for you all as you go at the end of this month. And it always makes things easier when, for the board, when we get to know the people that all this Christian literature will be going to. So I thank you for the opportunity to come here and to present that. I am not a preacher, although some of people accuse me of preaching. I'm a teacher, and you all have allowed me the opportunity to have this, and I need somebody who knows how to plug that thing into that wall outlet to go plug that. That'll save me from not keep on talking. So, as a teacher, I like audiovisual and our pictures. I think pictures are very important. And I also like blackboards, but since blackboards are pretty much obsolete, I have resigned myself to whiteboards. Now, the reason I'm putting this up here right now is because I know that when you use a picture, everyone stares at the picture and forgets to listen to the teacher. So I'm going to let you go ahead and stare at the picture, and then we'll get back to the teacher. So open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 16. A number of years ago, I was asked to teach a Bible school in Holmes County, Ohio. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Holmes County, Ohio, it's sort of the mecca of Amishville, I guess you'd say, and there's all kinds of different breeds up in there. And one of the teachers that I was teaching with was a bishop in a New Order Amish church. Now, this was kind of a beachy church that I was teaching at, but he was a bishop at a New Order Amish church. Since that time, he has left the New Orders. But at that time, and his name was Joe Mullet. I don't know. Has anybody ever heard of Joe Mullet? All right. Very good. Okay. He was Joe Mullet. I think up in Holmes County, they call him Jewish Joe now. I think that's his kind of his nickname. Yeah? Okay. Yeah, it's kind of his nickname. But Joe had an interesting program, an interesting class to me, where he put things in perspective as if we were first century Christians. And I have been really blessed a lot of times in studying and thinking about that, thinking about the things Joe taught us, and also thinking about how certain things have changed. And one example would be, as I understand it, my yoke is easy, my burden is light, that Jesus said to us. Well, a yoke in the first century was not a cow's yoke. It was the teacher's teaching. So you would go as a community here, you would say, well, we represent something. We have a certain teaching that we as brotherhood are all comfortable with, and that would be your yoke. And so your yoke, is your yoke as a community easy? Is the burden light, or do you punch at it? But Jesus said, and so it kind of opens up my eyes a little bit to so many different little things that took place in the scriptures that maybe we just could be a little bit more enlightened on. One of those things is found here in Matthew chapter 16, starting in verse 13. Very familiar verses, I'm sure, to Bible reading people. When Jesus came unto the coasts of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples. Now I'm going to stop right there because Jesus said a lot in words we don't understand. Well, where is Caesarea Philippi? And that's the reason we got the map. And thank you, brethren, for letting me use my overheads. But where is Caesarea Philippi? Does anyone see it? I should have a little red pen. Does anyone see it? Almost at the top. You're exactly right. It's up here. Caesarea Philippi, right up here. There's another Caesarea that is over in here somewhere. Here it is. That's not the Caesarea. In fact, we'll tell you a little bit why they named it Caesarea Philippi. But it's way up here. Now, Jesus came and took his disciples to Caesarea Philippi. Well, is Caesarea Philippi in Galilee? No. Is Caesarea Philippi in Judea? No. Jesus, for some reason, took his disciples and brought them out of, could we say, Jewish domain, where their comfort zone was, where Galilee was, and where Israel was. He took them out of there and brought them to an area that was heathen. He took these 12 men and he brought them out of their comfort zone where they could find family, maybe some friends, maybe they'd walk the path. And he brought them to a place that they understood. But we don't. If you're not a real student of geography and a student of what was going on at that time. But it has a tremendous impact when we understand about Caesarea Philippi on us. God is such a great teacher. God is such a one. Jesus is the best teacher. And he can, and this where he brought them teaches us so much for 2016 Christians. Well, if you look at it, Caesarea Philippi, it's 25 miles north of Galilee. And I don't know how fast these 12 men walked, but I suspect it took more than one day. If you could walk 12 miles a day, it probably took them 2 days out into this heathen land. And it's at the base of Mount Hermon. And in the Old Testament, it was Baal God, Baal of fortune. Baal, the god Baal, it was called in Old Testament times. But one of the things that Caesarea Philippi means to us, and do we have that? Here it is. Do all these work about the same? Let me see if I can get a black one to work. If we were to walk into Caesarea Philippi, we'd see a big... Nope, that one's not going to work. We need to get rid of that one, our trustee or whoever takes care of magic markers. All right. If we go, let's try this one. All right. If we were going to Caesarea Philippi, we would see a stream coming out of a mountain. And it's a big mountain. And right in here is a cave. And this stream comes out of that cave. So if you can in your mind, picture coming to, let's just put another hill over here. And here's Jesus and his disciples. And they look down onto this cave at Caesarea Philippi, where the headwaters of the Jordan River are coming forth and heading down south. That's where the Jordan River starts, in Caesarea Philippi. Now, as I said that, there was one brother over here. I always listened to his students. He said, "Ah," and I like that because he got it. He got it. Here's where it starts. So here are these Jewish men, these deeply religious Jewish men who are following Jesus Christ. And we want to look a little bit later at what all that was going on. But they're following this teacher in a typical rabbi kind of students. They're following him. And he brings them 2 days, at least a 2-day walk to Caesarea Philippi. They're looking down at that and they know that the Jordan River starts here. And so what do they think? Well, this is represents all Jewish history. And tradition has it that they thought that this is what began all Jewish heritage and the Jewish temple and the Jews waiting for the Savior and the Jewish religious power and the whole Jewish religious system, all that. That was important to them in their religious upbringing. Here was the beginning of the Jordan River. Here was the beginning of all the things we believe as far as looking at it. It symbolized it. It's not the beginning of it because, of course, that was through God. But it symbolized so much of their background. It symbolized it. So we have 12 men and Jesus staring down there. But there's something else. As they stared at these cliffs and this cistern here, there were little alcoves up on this rock face. And in these rock faces were idols to Baal. Because this rock and the Jordan coming out was not only for symbolize some Jewish tradition, it also was the beginning of Baal worship and the temples of Baal, the fertility god, the god of sun, soil, and rain. Baal worship. This cavern had a large deep cistern in it that the water would come up and then flow out. And it was somewhat believed that it was the depths of hell down in there, the abyss. But it was the beginning of fertility. Now, when we think of fertility, we think of immorality. But fertility gods also represent money, because crops and good crops meant money. And good crops, money, meant wealth. So if you wanted to be wealthy and you wanted to have nice things and you wanted to increase in stature and you wanted to have power, you better worship the fertility god. And here's where his worship began. Right there. In their worship service, it also represented some immoral practices, immoral lifestyles, and an immoral religious program. But all good things started with this fertility god. We could have all the good things in life if we just worship this fertility god. We can have all the stuff we wanted if we just worship this fertility god. We could have covetous attitudes. You make more to have more. And it was there in Baal worship. Well, that wasn't the only one the disciples were looking at. Remember, keep in your mind these 12 men who had walked with this teacher. And they'd walked them long distance, comes to a place where Jewish tradition was steeping out with the Jordan River, where this Baal worship was up in the cavern, in those little alcoves in this rock face. They were seeing the fruits of wanting a very prosperous, and they wanted stuff. But it also represented the Greeks. Because in this mountain, in this area, there was a temple built up on top of it. And the temple was called Panion. And the town right there was Panias. And it was to worship the god Pan of the Greeks. The god of the Greeks. Well, go back in your mind and think about the Greeks during the time of Jesus. What was the New Testament written in? Greek. What was all higher education about? The Greeks. What was intellectual development about? The Greeks. What do we still have as symbols for the American Medical Association with that snake and thing? That's Greek. The Greeks were the intellectual power of this world. The Greeks were the ones who determined the education. The Greeks were the ones who had that drive to understand. The Greeks formed a philosophy that today we call the Hellenistic philosophy. Hellenistic. You need to remember that word because it enters into, over and over again, our scriptures. The book of John basically is addressing one of the Hellenistic falsehoods. Hellenistic system. And the Hellenistic system, and we'll put a little temple up here that worshiped the god of the Greeks, the Pan. The Hellenistic system reverenced I. The Hellenistic system puts extreme importance on me. I decide what I want. I decide what's important for me. I decide what I listen to. I decide you do not have the right to interfere with my life because I am in control of my life. I am important. That was the Greeks. That was the Hellenistic world. What world, what philosophy do we have in the northern hemisphere of this world today? What philosophy do we have in America? U.S. America is a broad term. What philosophy do we have in the United States today? Hellenistic. We, the individual, is of most importance. And you do not have the right to tell me what to do. Because I decide what to do. That's Hellenism. That's Greek mythology. Greek idolatry. And we face it. Well, we'll look a little bit later at that. So these 12 Jews with their teacher were watching and they see the Greek temple that worshiped the individual, the Hellenistic. Well, what other power could there be? What other could there these 12 men face? Jewish dead religion. We got or a religion that was failing them. We got the pan gods up there, and we got Baal worship up there, and they face all these gods. Well, we come to the Roman culture. So you see, King Herod the Great had built a marble temple there to Augustus Caesar for political reasons. And this temple worshipped the emperor at that time, the political, the military might of the world. Rome represented law and order and military right and political correctness. And Herod had built a temple to this, the legal system, politics. Well, Herod Great dies and divided the emperor between his three sons. And Philip, the tetrarch, inherited the northern section. And he renames his town Caesarea for Caesar. And who was it that did that? Philip. And thus we get Caesarea Philippi to distinguish it from the other Caesarea. Rome, political power, might, economic power. That's why the gospel traveled so fast, because there was peace. The Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. It represented the laws of Rome. It represented the roads of Rome, the armies of Rome, the world powers of Rome. We're all located there. And here comes Jesus, born in a sheep barn with sheep manure on the floor. Raised in a little backwater village called Nazareth. Jesus, a nobody. Just a carpenter by trade, who had recruited these 12 men who were not just common people. Jesus had no wife. Jesus had no children. He was homeless. He had no big business. No business. He had done 80% of his ministry in a little province of Galilee, not Judea or Jerusalem, where all the power was. He just ran around the Galilean hills. And he comes 25 miles into a pagan land and comes into the site of Jewish history, Baal worship, Greek worship, and Roman worship. Let's continue on. When Jesus came to the coasts of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said, "Some say thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremias, or one of the prophets." He saith unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" Who say ye that I am? See, we're coming to the end of Jesus' ministry here on earth. He knows what's ahead of him. He understands that these 12 men are going to have to carry on because the redemption needed to take place through his blood. He needed to rise again, and he was going to ascend into heaven. And he understood all that, and the wrath of God was going to be upon him for our sins. What we did, the wrath of God came down on him, and he had to drink all of it. And he knew that. And these 12 men had to understand who I am. We had to understand who this man was, who had no credentials, nothing. Go to verse 16. And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Peter, the spokesman for these 12 men, the leader of this little group of disciples, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus, I can stand in front of this cavern. I can stand at all the things that are important to the world. And you're the Christ. You're the only hope we have. You're the Savior. You're the Messiah that has come. I don't understand totally, but I've seen you, and I've walked with you, and I've understood you, and I understand you are the Christ, the very Son of the living God, the one who's going to rescue us. Rescue us. His Messiahship would be realized in the terms of Isaiah. As a servant, in his humbleness, his obedience, his suffering, his accomplishing his mission by the cross, the resurrection, and its ascension. The Son of the living God. By being called by Peter the Son of the living God, Peter was acknowledging that he does the work of God on earth. Peter was acknowledging that as I see this man stand before me in front of this host of witnesses of these temples, you are God. You are the God who set up the covenant relationship. You are the God who has the Messiah relationship. You are the God that's the King. As the book of Matthew continues to tell us over and over again. You are the Lord relationship. And you are also the Master relationship. You are the Lord relationship and the Master relationship. You are the Son of God. I believe, we all need to come to Caesarea Philippi. We need to come there on a daily basis. It's not something that just happened to Janie and I 30 years ago. Maybe 30 years ago today. It's a continuing process that we have to come to Caesarea Philippi and say, who is he? Who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Who do you say? And so we have to immerse ourselves in the gospel. We have to realize that as parents and grandparents and youth and brothers and sisters of Christ, we need to walk together and to look at this Caesarea Philippi and say, who do I think you are, Christ? Who do we think we are, Christ? Who does your family think you are, Jesus? We need to come to the realization that as a body, we don't do this by ourselves, but as a body, we all need to understand who we are. Who do you say are love? So the big question is, who do you say I am? Who do you say I am? As a family, as an individual? Well, do we have a religious belief system? Yeah, we do. We have a belief system. And sometimes that religious belief system can attack who Jesus is. To be very honest with you. We, as we face Caesarea Philippi, we are attacked by the religious system, as these Jews were, of health and wealth. If I just join the right church, if I just wear the right clothes, if I just say the right words, God's going to bless me abundantly and I'm going to have the biggest car and the best truck and the biggest house. And my wife is never going to get sick and we're going to have a whole slew of children. And everything is just going to be wonderful because there is no cross to bear. I won't have to suffer. I won't have to deny myself. You ever been to Holmes County? Bring it down. I never have any problems with my voice in a group, but I think it's the fellas in the back there. We face in our religious system no discipleship. See, Janie and I go to prison a lot. And we can get volunteers to come into prison. And you can be saved. And the same men will be saved week after week because they, prisoners, know what you want to hear. And so if they can get, if a volunteer can come in from a group and have 20 men be saved, they go back running back to the home church and say, I saved 20 men. Happens all the time. No discipleship. And we are tempted, maybe not to that extreme, but we are tempted into thinking that we don't have to have a discipleship. We don't have to be disciples of Jesus Christ. We don't have to follow His word. We don't have to give up everything. We don't have to follow His yoke. We're tempted. I can be my own church gospel. Me, myself, and I. The problem is, when you have a church like that, you almost have divisions right away. Because you don't like yourself very much. Or we can have a religious system that's cold and dead. We can have a no evangelism gospel. And we can have a gospel that's, I think there's a German term, quiet on the land. We can have that too. We can be tempted into looking at this mountain and seeing that religious system. Who do you say that I am? Baal worship. Surely we don't get into idols of fertility gods. Well, how much of your day is made up of making money that you already have a lot of anyway? Just a little bit more. It'll make things comfortable. How about adult playthings? Now, I'm not talking something pornographic. I'm just talking about maybe a nice four-wheeler. Now, I have nothing against four-wheelers. Well, maybe I do. But when they become playthings, it's idolatry. It's idolatry. Well, here's one that gets everyone excited. Baal worship, fertility. How about technology? Yeah. What about technology? Now, I realize we have to have technology. Probably most of our modern day vehicles wouldn't even turn on if we didn't have a technology. But we're talking about the media technology. Do you know what? We at Deer Lodge do not text, and we don't have compute, or we don't have email, and we don't have online connections. And you know what the argument is to get it? Think about Baal worship. Think about what that means, fertility. It's because we can make more money if we had it. I can't run my business without it. I can't do it. I need more money. What are we worshiping? What are we sacrificing our children to? What are we sacrificing them? Baal worship. What are we sacrificing good, honest men to? When all they got to do is just click. And they get something right in front of their faces that I used to have to go to a drugstore to buy. Do you understand what I mean, men? It's right there. How many ordained brethren have fallen? How many non-ordained brethren have fallen? How many young youth boys have fallen and young youth girls have fallen? All because I couldn't run my business without it. Is that Baal worship? Am I too hard? You all think about it. Baal worship. Who do you say that I am? Fertility. Getting the best of what we want. Getting the best clothes we want. I think looks to me like mostly your brethren have this problem. Having a nice shirt. You know, the sisters here are still making their clothes. But us brethren can go wild with ours. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but we sure can. Baal worship. We just got to look good. You know, we're out on the road. We're meeting people who are important, and they got money, and I want a little bit of their money, and I just have to look right. just look that right. You know, I could trim up my beard so I look like a movie, you know, that Brad Pitt kind of look like. And you all don't know that. I hope not. And little stubbles here and there. And we can look right. Well, what about the Greek God? What about the Hellenistic worldview? What time? Oh, we're getting way past. I'm sorry. What about the Greek God? Hellenistic worldview, education, my rights, do what I want, dress as I want, live as I want, live in the house I want. My opinion is the best opinion. My lack of submission is just because I'm right. My individuality right, my peers right, my role models, my entertainment right. The Hellenistic worldview. Can you put the examples into it? What amazes me is how many plain people, so-called plain people, know more about going downhill skiing than I did after 35 years of living in the world. I don't understand that. Or how to ride a super-duper boat. Or how to run a... You understand what I'm saying. I don't understand that. But I have the right to do that. What if the things we as churches face, if we were willing to take seriously the Beatitudes, Jesus' best teaching, Jesus' ultimate teaching on what He wants His disciples to be, and what's the first one? What's the first blessing? What's the first makari that is said in His teaching? Blessed are the what in spirit? Poor. Where we give up our Hellenistic views, we give up our pride, we give up my rights. Jesus knew that. And He knew we were going to struggle with it. What if we just obeyed that one? Would you as a brotherhood be able to maybe put away some little side things that really aren't that important? Would you youth, I don't know where you all are at, would you youth be able to rest in what you as a church have decided or this is where how we want to go? If you would give that up, your right to do something? Would you have more time to devote to prison ministry? To going to foreign fields? To going to Cuba and teaching them how to sing? You'll have to ask those that are here last night about that. Would you have more if I gave up my rights? The Greek God's here. And what does Jesus ask? Who do you say that I am? The Roman God, the God of power, the God of politics. Boy, we've seen that this last couple of months. The God of might, the God of. Let's go to verse 17 and 18, because I'm running out of... I get excited here. Jesus answered and said, after Peter said those things, blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say unto you, thee, from thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whosoever shalt thou bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose in earth shall be loosed in heaven. If you look up the word Peter, and if you have a Strong's, it's write a little notation in your somewhere on a piece of paper. It's number 4074 in Strong's. Peter, in Greek, is Petros. And unlike the Roman church, which has said that this rock, upon this rock I will build my church, and it's some big, huge boulder, Petros is a small pebble, is a small stone. It's not a huge boulder. Peter, you're not a huge boulder. You're just a stone. A small, everyday, common stone. You're a Petros. And Jesus says, upon that stone, that common stone, I'm going to build my church. Peter's. That's all we are. Just common stones that God says He's going to build us on, build His kingdom on, because we're just Petroses. If we think any more of ourselves than that, we become a hindrance. Can I just show one more thing? I don't know. Yeah, Chris, is that okay? It's okay. I really want you to see something. As we think about who Jesus is, remember, I like to draw pictures. Go to Revelations chapter 3. And as we worked our way there, you know that's where God talks to the churches. There's something very important when we think about who do you say I am. There's something very important in being stones that we need to grab a hold of. And I've used this in prison many, many times. Starting in verse 14 of chapter 3 of Revelation. And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. The best way I can see to demonstrate what this statement is saying at least I got the children's attention. I'm going to label this person here hot. I'm going to label this person here lukewarm. And this one's cold. I'm going to tell you that to me, this is what those verses are saying. And this has to do with who do you say that I am? If in our hearts we can honestly declare to God that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, and I give my toll, and we can face those idols, those systems that this world has set up, this political, this social, this Hellenistic worldview, that we can face those and say, no, I believe that Jesus Christ is my Lord. He saved me through His blood. I believe that totally. I give myself totally to it. In my mind, that's the one who's hot. That's the one who really wants the gospel to go forward. His whole world settles is around the gospel. His whole family knows that what Dad stands for is kingdom building. That's what his life is about. Ask your children sometime. What do you think I'm about? See what they say. Are you about being a good farmer? Are you being a good mini barn builder? I don't know what you all do. Ask your children. Can they say, Dad, I don't know, you sure like to talk about Jesus a lot. The cold one, to me, is a heathen. We got heathens in Tennessee. Do you all have any heathens here in Indiana? Okay. We got a lot of heathens in Tennessee. And if you all were convicts, I would tell you, you better be a good heathen because that's all you got. And there's some joy, a very fleeting joy, in being a good heathen. So just go ahead and be a heathen because you're going to hell if you want to be a good heathen. Be a good one because this is all you got. But we have people in Tennessee that are good heathens. But I believe what God despises, what God does cannot put up with, and what causes He is going to spew them out of His mouth. We call this in prison jailhouse religion. We call this in church, well, maybe a brother that's just having some difficulties. He may be struggling a little bit. He may have his priorities mixed up just a little bit. Just have a little grace, George. He doesn't. Brothers and sisters, either you're hot or you're cold. And either you start, if you're trying to play games with God, it's not going to work. If we have our priorities wrong, it's not going to work. Mamas, if you have your priorities wrong, it's not going to work. Youth, if you have your priorities wrong, it's not going to work. And see what happens? The hot one cannot talk to the cold one because the lukewarm one is in the way. If you're playing games, you're in the way. And the cold one cannot see what a real Christian is because the lukewarm one's in the way. You're in the way. And God says, I'd rather vomit you out and get rid of you because you're in the way of my kingdom building. You're in the way. If our priorities aren't right, we're in the way. If we don't know who He is, and if we don't know, give total allegiance to Him, and if we don't give our total life to Him, you're in the way. If we have other gods in our lives, you're in the way. That's the way I interpret Revelation chapter 3 to that church in Laodicea. And I realize I'm just an old teacher and getting older. And sooner or later, I'm going to my Maker. But I just cannot let myself get in the way. Brothers and sisters, decide who Jesus is today. Decide. I know I am complete faith that 99% of the people in this room have accepted Jesus Christ. And if I was in a bunch of convicts in Morgan County Correctional Facility, 99% of them too would say they've accepted Jesus Christ. But what their priorities are and what their life indicates is not. What does our lives indicate? Who's important to you? What's important to you? What God and those gods that we just looked at, dear, are you worshiping? Am I worshiping? I face it too. I'm getting tired. It's easy for me just to sit home, and Janie knows I'm getting burned out. It's easy. God asks us to stay hot. I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race. And now it's time to go home. Dale Heise, any of you all know Dale? Dale Heisey taught my son this prayer, that same guy that's running around in with the Tatamatas. And I'd like for you to repeat it back to me. Lord, give me life for my work. And work for my life. And after that, I want to go home. Lord, give me life, work for my life, and life to continue my work. And after my work's done, take me home. I think if we can say that prayer, if we can mean that prayer, God's going to fulfill that. His kingdom will come on earth as it is in heaven. We will be part of that kingdom building process. We will be able to face these gods. I think we will be overcome with the blessings that God has for us. Overcome. We're the only ones who stop it. And we will all be overcome with the blessings God does. Thank you for allowing me to talk about Caesarea Philippi. I pray that I have not offended anyone or been a stumbling block in anyone's faith. God bless you all.